Live on 99.1 The Sports Animal and Fox 43 Sports in Knoxville. This is Tennessee Sports Night, presented by Provision Cares Proton Therapy. If you or a loved one has cancer, you need to know about the benefits of proton therapy. To learn more about your treatment options, visit protonbenefits.com. Now, to the studio for Tennessee Sports Night.
Well, it is a Wednesday, a hump day, Tennessee Sports Night, on your television at Fox 43 Sports and on your radio at 99.1 FM. Yeah, it's been a long day for us, but we keep rolling. Eric Kane, Tyler Ivins from the starting lineup. If you would like to interact with our 30-minute program this evening, you can do so. The hashtag to the right of your screen, that is TN Sports Night. You know, Kaner, we sit 52 days away until it's football time in Tennessee, and one of my favorite things is continuously watching different publications, different outlets, roll out their personal thoughts, not just on the SEC, but the program here in Knoxville at the University of Tennessee. Maybe I'm a sucker of the mothership. I'm a big fan of some of the personalities and writers that they have over at ESPN. So whatever the Football Power Index rolls out each and every year, that's when I know we're getting dangerously close to football time. I mean, next week, we're going to be in Hoover, Alabama. Extensive coverage of everything happening at SEC Media Days begins Monday morning with us at 6 a.m. But today, and you'll see it here when Billy throws it up on the screen behind the scenes, you're going to see where Tennessee ranks when it comes to ESPN's Football Power Index. We'll go ahead, we'll throw it up right now. Me and Kaner will go at this sushi style. I mean, some of the numbers, I wouldn't say they're shocking, but they come off as quite questionable. It has me scratching my chin saying, what do we have ourselves into? Out of the 12 games this year, Tennessee, at least based right now, July 10th, ESPN, they have them favored in 9 of those 12 contests. The 3 they're not favored in, it's the obvious 3 against Florida, Georgia, and Alabama. Your initial thoughts when you saw those come across your, your phone, your computer screen earlier or last night?
Yeah, I mean, nine games Tennessee's favored to win, according to this FPI. A little bullish. Tennessee has some talent. I think they're going to be improved this year as a team. I think that Tennessee will win seven games being the floor. That's my thoughts going into the season right now and at the beginning of July. But, I mean, there are some games here, you know, South Carolina, you have Missouri in particular. Of course, you know, we've talked about the Mississippi State game against two second-year head coaches that I don't really know. Now, you know, you lose a star quarterback, and last year you bring in Kelly Bryant. You know, how much does that advance the system over there in Missouri? But nine games Tennessee's favored in. I don't think Tennessee's going to win nine games this year.
No Nick Fitzgerald, no Drew Locke. I mean, we can go down the list of quarterbacks who were in the SEC last year that gave Tennessee fits. And coming up during the Big Three, you're going to see where those signal callers rank, at least based on 24/7 sports. Always a big list when those roll out as well. I mean, when you see Tennessee on this list, and we provided the graphic, and you're going to see those 12 teams rolled out for the Vols, at least the opposition this year, there are quite a few teams that are even Stevens. You already brought up the Missouri game.
Yeah.
50.4% this year. It can go one way or the other. There are some games, though, that leave me scratching my head, and here's where I ponder. You're going to see on the monitor Georgia a more likely win than Florida. I get it. It's in the swamp this year, and maybe I shouldn't be splitting hairs when it comes to the FBI percentages. I'm one of those guys who likes to split hairs. Not only that, but you look at Vanderbilt and Kentucky as well. ESPN believes that Tennessee has a better time of beating Vanderbilt, who's had their hands full with the Commodores each of the last 5-6 seasons, than a Kentucky team that's only beaten the Volunteers one time since I was born in 1986. So again, ESPN, you go with the good. Sometimes you got to take the bad as well.
You look at this Georgia-Florida quandary here. Okay, Tennessee has a 33.4% chance of beating Georgia, according to the FBI. Florida in the swamp, 31%. So in my opinion, I think these are two games Tennessee's not going to get here in year two.
That's sure.
Just putting it out there, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I think the big reason why here is Tennessee plays so, Tennessee doesn't win in the swamp. They've had their chances. They've been there. They've had chances to win year after year after year. But you know, Casey Clawson's the last quarterback to win in the swamp. Eric Ainge didn't
still
do it.
Still alarming.
Yeah. Eric Ainge was great against Georgia, but, you know, and so on and so forth. But I think that has a big reason with the percentages there. I think those are two losses, so I kind of wipe those out. But you bring up Kentucky, you know, a 10-win season last year for the Wildcats, first time since 1977. You lose Benny Snell, your best offensive weapon. You lose your top five draft pick and Josh Allen off the edge right there. And Tennessee still won pretty convincingly last year. Tennessee played a great game, so I see that. I think it's a little high, but still I think that's a winnable game. South Carolina is the one that gets me. Tennessee should have won that game last year. They just quite frankly, ran out of gas.
Yeah.
Had some personal fouls there at the end, 15 yarders that came back to bottom, but just kind of ran out of gas, had a great offensive showing. But this is a Will Muschamp coach ball club, and Will Muschamp is 7-0 against Tennessee. Just for some reason, Tennessee loses to Coach Muschamp. So I think that percentage at 63% is a little high. And so when you're looking at some of these swing games, those three right off the bat for me are ones that I would say, I don't know about these percentages here on this FPI.
I remember the very first time Will brought up on the morning show 8 wins for Tennessee. And trust me, I needed a little convincing if I was going to try to jump on that bandwagon. ESPN, when you at least even out the numbers, you see it's roughly around 7.5. Mm-hmm. You take the percentages, you give some, you take some. If you meet in the middle, 7.5 victories is where they're looking right now for Tennessee. Those swing games, you have to ask yourself, which ones are going to be kind to Tennessee? Because Mississippi State, that comes after Georgia. Then you see the South Carolina matchup. That comes after Alabama. Or if you actually want to stack the dominoes up, South Carolina comes after Georgia, Mississippi State, and Alabama.
That's how it was last year as well. And again, Tennessee played well on the road. But, you know, South Carolina was that game. It was the fifth game of the Gauntlet 5. And I said, if this game was anywhere else on the schedule, I like the Volunteers. Going into the season, I said this. I like the Volunteers' chances going to Columbia and beating South Carolina. And they almost did. It's kind of the same situation here. It's at the end of Florida, Georgia, Mississippi State, Alabama, then there's South Carolina.
Do you believe that ESPN's being a little too bullish with Tennessee this year?
I do.
What is it about this? Maybe it's just because they expect Jeremy Pruitt and this coaching staff to improve. I mean, look, if you go from 5-7 to 7-5, Tennessee fans should take that, especially in year number two. But when you see things like what the FPI gets rolled out, maybe that's adding a little false hope to it.
I mean, Tennessee's defensive backfield was young last year. I think it's going to be better this year. You've got some more guys. You have a lot of new guys rotating in on the front seven.
Sure.
But you got a couple linebackers that have been there, done that, and you're going to have to replace a lot of the defensive line. You look at offense, everybody's returning. You have a quarterback in Jerry Garantano. I mean, there was a piece on ESPN yesterday rolled out saying that he is the biggest, guy that's going to improve this year because he was good last year.
Love breakout stars.
Exactly, and arguably behind the worst offensive line in the entire country. So you look at this offense, despite potentially two freshmen starting on that offensive line for a number of games this year, you have a quarterback that you feel good about. You have so much talent at the wide receiver corps, and you got a stable of running backs back there. When you look at the offense from afar, you're like, it's not that bad. It's just all about how those guys protect and five-man protection, six-man protection. If Tennessee can move and score some more points this year, I think ESPN looking at that is like, okay, well, Tennessee should win this game, but you just got to see it. You got to go out there and play, and you got to play well at the offensive line.
Do they automatically get a two-game buffer, if you will, or a two-game cushion, again, from 5 wins last year to 7 wins this year? Because the schedule just is that much easier. I mean, you trade West Virginia, you get BYU.
Yeah.
You're not having to face off against Auburn, even though you did pick up a W last year. In exchange, you get Mississippi State, who is minus defensive players, who is minus Nick Fitzgerald. I mean, a showdown of second-year coaches, you'd like to assume, and you know what happens when you assume that Jeremy Pruitt would have at least the edge against Joe Moorhead with this game being played at Neyland Stadium.
Yeah, you and I have been on that game. It's October 12th. We've been on that game for weeks now, and I believe Tennessee can get that game. It's after Georgia, sure, but it's before Alabama. I just look at this and I say Tennessee has 4 guaranteed wins, non-conference. Tennessee, in my opinion, has 3 losses for sure, Florida, Georgia, Alabama. And then you have 5 games. And according to the FBI, Tennessee wins all 5 of those games, or they should. I think Tennessee can get 2 or 3 of those, so I think the floor is 7, potentially 8 for this team. So, yes, to answer your question, I do believe a 2-game cushion.
You know, we just teased it just moments ago, 24/7 rolled out their top 14 rankings of the SEC signal callers. We'll have that for you on the other side. Not only that, we'll take a peek at Wimbledon. And also, when it comes to blowing out birthday candles on July 10th, we preview one of the NFL's top wide receivers, one of them.
Yeah.
But is he the top?
He's still there.
Eric Kay and Tyler Ivins, we discuss more before 7:30 here on Tennessee Sports Night.
This segment of Tennessee Sports Night is brought to you by United Grocery Outlet. Shop us first.
Again, it's hashtag TN Sports Night if you'd like to join the Wednesday crew on your television at Fox 43 and on your radio at 99.1 FM. All right, 24/7 sports. They must know that we're 52 days away to kick off to the Tennessee football season because they've rolled out the list from 14-1, the best signal callers in the SEC. Look, the list is on your screen right now, and 1 through 3, maybe even four. Maybe that shouldn't surprise you. Tua, Jake Fromm, Kellen Mond, and you know what, Florida fans, here is your gimme for Wednesday. Felipe Franks comes in at number four. And you know what? We got a lot of LSU fans in the area as well. They've been screaming Joe Burrow's name since his transfer last year. He comes in at number five. Once you sort through Bentley, Bryant, there it is. Jarrett Garantano, Tennessee signal caller, another year, another head coach, beg your pardon, another coordinator, and another coach, another playbook. Tommy Stevens, the Penn State transfer, his former OC is going to be helping him call the shots down in Starkville this year. The rest of the list as follows. Any of these names kind of hop out to you. Look, I understand, again, it's splitting hairs until you actually see some of these new names like Hicks, Coral, Gatewood. Maybe you have to see them in action before you actually start pointing fingers, but I don't think there should be any. In fairness, you can start bench and cut. Very nicely done. Any of these names maybe alarm you?
Well, I just think, you know, you look at the top two and there's a significant drop off after that. Then, you know, Kellen Mond's in a league of his own. Then there's a drop off after that. You have Felipe Franks. And then you got, you know, Bentley, Burrow, Bryant, and then Garantano. I just think, you know, I referenced this earlier in this article that's out there that was put out there yesterday showing how good Garantano was last year despite the pressure in front of him, how good his completion percentage was under pressure.
Sure.
If you give that man some time, you just don't know, but you need to see it. And that's why I think Garantano is so far down, because he only threw 12 touchdowns last year, protected the ball, three interceptions. Despite how good he was with the minimal help around him, you know, to be higher on a list when you look at quarterbacks in the SEC, you still need to produce more, and I think Tennessee's better around him this year. So I'm not surprised Garantano's middle of the pack right there at eight, but certainly I do think that you can have a conversation, Burrow, Bentley, and Bryant in front of him.
It's going to be surprising if we revisit these rankings at the end of the year, and if Garantano does make that growth leap a lot of people expect him to, where he ends up on the list. So I'd like to see 24/7's preseason, postseason list. As we go on to number two in the big three, let's head across the pond to Wimbledon. And hey, you know what? You got the ladies' highlights in front of you now. Maybe some interest has fallen off with Coco falling the 15-year-old yesterday in Tuesday action. But I will tell you, that's where the most intrigue is coming on the women's side of the Wimbledon bracket, because if you're looking on the men's side, copy and paste like years past. Semifinal action begins in 2 days. Novak Djokovic, Roger Federer, Rafael Nadal, the top three seeds, all advancing to what we're going to have more than likely as another fantastic showdown in the Wimbledon's men final.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Tennis Sangram of VFL, he went on to the fourth round. 15-year-old Coco Gauff, you mentioned, they're out. They were the early storylines. Now you have Serena on the women's side back to the semifinal round. It's the big three you mentioned on the men's side. You know, four left, three of which are Djokovic, Federer, Nadal. Each had pretty convincing wins. Djokovic won in straight sets earlier today against a ranked opponent. So excited to see how that finale rolls on. But like you said, it's been a fantastic Wimbledon tournament so far.
I was actually kind of hoping we could get Eric Kane to pronounce some of these names that Joker and Nadal and Federer had been eliminating.
Ki Nishikori.
One more time.
Ki Nishikori.
Thumbs up from the guy on the other side of the table. Formerly some sad news. I don't know what it is with us and Kaner, but it seems that the last two shows we've had to talk about an unfortunate passing way too young at age. You see there, former Predators captain Greg Johnson passed away at the age of 48 in his Michigan home. Johnson, known as the first captain in the franchise's history there in the city of Nashville, 145 career goals, second rounder of the 1989 NHL draft.
Yeah, very unfortunate news. Not only a figure in Nashville here in the state of Tennessee, but he made his rounds around the league. He was on the national team in his home country, so it's very unfortunate. So young, too, only 48 years old, and you hope it's no cause of death has been yet determined, so we'll have to keep eyes on that, but just prayers for him and his family. Anytime someone's gone before the age of, you know, 50, it's just very, very unfortunate.
Eric Kane, Tyler Ivins. So now that the All-Star game is in our rearview mirror, where do we go from here? When we preview the second half of the season, who will make a late run? Who will stay the course on their way to the postseason? Halfway home, 15 minutes to play with. More Tennessee Sports Night on a Wednesday next here on Fox 43 and 99.1 FM.
And now, back to Tennessee Sports Night on Fox 43 Sports and 99.1, the Sports Animal.
We welcome you back. Another edition of Tennessee Sports Night, halfway home here on a Wednesday. It is Tyler Ivins and Eric Kane. We're going to take you to the bottom of the hour before we get you to the Goldbergs. And the Goldbergs, if you watch that show, based in the city of Philadelphia, they're huge, huge Phillies fans.
I was walking the door going, why is the Goldberg still on? I don't want to watch these Phillies fans. But that's a perfect segue to talk about baseball, National League East, as well as the rest of Major League Baseball. What'd you miss last night right here on Fox 43? Well, you watched a pretty, pretty impressive all-star game between the American League and the National League. But it was all she wrote, and we kind of knew how this would play out because for the seventh consecutive year, the American League got the best of the senior circuit by the final score of 4-3. Sandwiched by a pair of Yankees, Masahiro Tanaka gets the W. Aroldis Chapman strikes out the side. He picks up the save. And speaking of striking out the side, apparently that's all the hometown kid Shane Bieber had to do to lock up all-star game MVP honors. Look, Will was very animated about it. You shared your thoughts this morning. You could see the two-seamers working there onside the highlights. Nice little breaker there. Retires Kettle Marte. Your thoughts on Bieber, the former college walk-on who didn't know he was actually going to be a part of the AL squad until a couple of days ago. Tito Francona is on the coaching staff with Alex Cora and said, I got a guy you might want to use, and it ends up paying dividends.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, good for him, okay? He is the hometown guy. You mentioned a story, the walk-on in college. And so good for him getting that All-Star Game MVP. He's had a fantastic season. But when you look at this, the stat sheet, the PDF, you know, three guys drove in runs. The fourth run was driven in on a double play, you know, that you don't get credit for an RBI there. So, you know, no one, you know, in the lineup that you really felt comfortable giving that All-Star game MVP to. I would have went with Michael Brantley. He spent 10 years in Cleveland. If you're going to take the Cleveland angle, he spent 10 years in Cleveland, drove in the game's first run. He's in sure. Houston now, but why not give it to Michael Brantley in a game where there was no obvious MVP? It is what it is, but, you know, Shane Bieber, yeah, whatever. But All-Star game's so much fun. But I got to say, getting a little tired. I'm an NL guy. 26 of the last 32 All-Star games have been won by the American League. 7 straight. I'm a little sick of it.
I kind of bury it now because home field advantage isn't on.
That's true.
Still, yeah. An exhibition game to me. Yeah, I'd like to see my guys pull out a W, but now that they've actually buried home field advantage out of the All-Star game, whatevs, I could care less about that. Let's see here. 3,169 home runs. That's how many were jacked in the first half of the Major League Baseball season. Justin Verlander took a moment. He took his podium and said, look, this is garbage. This is ridiculous. We all know that Manfred started juicing the balls once he became the new commissioner of baseball. What are your thoughts about Verlander using his platform as the AL starter, saying enough's enough already?
Well, I mean, he's earned that platform. He's a multi-all-star, a potential Hall of Famer, a World Series champion. So if you want to use that platform, go right ahead. I do not think Rob Manfred intentionally doctored the balls for home runs. Now, you doctor the ball just like you doctor the football. You doctor the ball, you know, year in and year out basis. I think it's an unintended consequence that they're just kind of like, well, it's here. It is what it is. But scientists have been evaluating the baseball. They're evaluating the width separation, the height of the seams, and trying to determine why there's less drag on the baseball than they're just getting out of these ballparks. But for fans, I think it's fun. You know, you're seeing so many home runs, and you guys were talking this morning, you know, potentially some of these guys will make it in the Hall of Fame. Do you put an asterisk by saying they played in the juice ball era? I wouldn't go that far. It's to no fault of their own. This is all baseball. But for fans, it's fun and exciting to watch.
If nobody saw you spill the milk, clean it up, and just move on with your day, I think that's what Manfred's hoping, that this will just go away. I doubt that will happen. Second half predictions. Look, if the postseason started today, the Braves, they'd be taking on the Chicago Cubs. You would see the Dodgers clearly with the best record in baseball. They would be sitting and waiting. What are your thoughts? Anything change right now? Who makes kind of a late push around August and September for a spot in the postseason?
Well, the NL Central is the tightest division of baseball, first to fifth in that division, separated by 4.5 games.
That's
yes, the Cincinnati Reds are only 4.5 games back. So that's going to be a fun division to watch. I look at the Washington Nationals. They're hard on hiccup right now. They own the top wild card spot. Philly, right there in second place as well. So it'll be a fun NL race. On the AL side, Boston will emerge. Boston's 2 games back in the wild card. They're too good of a team to not make the playoffs. They will emerge there, and I think Tampa Bay will get that other playoff spot.
Do you want to flip your World Series prediction?
I have Yankees and Dodgers, so I'm good.
Yankees, Dodgers, Bronx Bombers get healthy. They find a way to win yet again another championship. Houston and Texas drew the short end of the straws, by the way. They don't get an extra day off. The other 28 get to kick their feet up while they start a 4-game set to kick off the second half. Coming up next, we last call, we talk National Football League, and we help a certain Antonio Brown blow out those candles. We say goodbye next.
And now, back to Tennessee Sports Night on Fox 43 Sports and 99.1, the Sports Animal.
All right, let's get out of here on a high note. Let's talk National Football League to say good night and goodbye. So goodbye here on Tennessee Sports Night. Antonio Brown, happy birthday to you, sir. You're 31 years of age, and your gift is, well, you're about to join training camp in Oakland, California with your brand new team. No more black and gold for Pittsburgh. It's going to be silver and black in Oakland. On his 31st birthday, I was looking at wide receivers once they hit 31 and where their career goes. There's not a lot of spoilers here. It doesn't fare well. Is Antonio Brown still the best wide receiver in the National Football League?
I wouldn't say he's the best, but he is certainly in the conversation, and he is certainly top five for sure. I mean, last year, despite missing the final game of the season, despite all the drama that Pittsburgh was with Big Ben, Le'Veon Bell, he still led the entire league with 15 touchdowns, receiving touchdowns, okay? He was 10th in yards, so he's still getting his yards. But when you have guys like Julio Jones and DeAndre Hopkins, I don't know if you can call him the best anymore.
You just mentioned two names there where I have more faith in the quarterbacks that are under center there in Houston and in Atlanta than I do Derek Carr in Oakland right now. And this morning I thought perhaps maybe I was going a little over the top by even going three deep and mentioning Odell Beckham Jr. in that mix. And that's with Baker Mayfield as his quarterback. You know, now that I sit back and actually digest it, I think I could actually make this list five deep. I really could. I think that right now your best wide receiver in the NFL is
DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah. Then I think you go Julio Jones. I think Michael Thomas, who's on your screen now from the New Orleans Saints, easily is a top three wide receiver in the NFL. Odell Beckham Jr., I know people don't like his antics on and off the field. The guy is still a talented wide receiver. Maybe you put Antonio Brown there then. Do you put Mike Evans on that list? There's still some other wide receivers. I think we're going to see a significant drop off for Brown, not because of the age, but also where he's playing football.
Well, you talk about Mike Evans and the quarterback under center. I mean, he's had a couple the last few years too, and he's still being productive at that wide receiver position. See, I'm just not big on OBJ. I mean, an unbelievable talent, but he gets in his own way so much. A lot of time he's boom or bust. I would have Antonio Brown over Odell Beckham Jr. for sure. He is in my top five, along with Hopkins, Jones, Thomas, and when on the field, Tyreek Hill.
Notice you didn't bring up A.J. Green there. I think that's going to make Rosie behind the scenes a little upset.
A.J. Green, a good receiver, but I don't know if he's in this conversation.
Hey, listen, lots to get into through the rest of the week, but also a reminder, SEC Media Days beginning 6 a.m. Monday in Hoover, Alabama. Big thank you to Bill, Sam, even Rosie, for Kaner, Tyler Ivins. Enjoy your Wednesday. Fox 43 and 99.1 FM.